welcome to another fabulous episode of Two Peas in a Podcast with Michelle.
And Trevor.
Now, Trevor, we went back over last month's fabulous podcast, but we were a little remiss. Due to a few technical errors, we had actually forgotten something, and we think it's really important that we do add it because...
Well, we were talking about compost, and we should make clear what green matter and brown matter are. I think, in a way, it's an oversimplification in that, let's just say, for instance, wood ash from the bonfire, it's actually grey matter. It's neither nitrogen nor carbon. It's actually added for the sake of potash, potassium, and the alkalinity. So there are a lot of other things involved in compost. So there's more than just green and brown matter. A lot of other things. But the authorities that be have said that is how we're going to describe it. And so in all these things, it's a simple way of describing how you've got to mix more than one element in a compost in order to get the heat and so forth. So would you like to actually go through our list that missed out last...
With the missed out list of green matter, because, yes. You know, like I'm the green goddess, so I have to talk about green matter.
That's true.
So all leaves and grasses, except be really careful. Don't put in the pest grass like the cooch, because I think nothing kills cooch, really, does it, Trevor? No. Waste vegetables, bread and leftovers and peels from the garden. You can put in your lawn clippings. Just be careful, sprinkle them, because I've made the mistake, I think I've mentioned that in a podcast before, of putting them en masse, and that was not fun for anyone. Rotting or aged fruit, and then your onion peel. And remember, we're like doing the layering, but they're really important for the compost. So sorry if we forgot to add that. And then the brown matter, Trevor. What's the brown matter?
Well, the brown matter is carbon. The green matter is nitrogen. But the carbon is most normally straw or hay of any types, including the types that are wet or spoiled. It doesn't have to be new stuff. Sawdust and things like wood chips and so forth. All manures that are brown, I guess, autumn leaves, coconut fibre, all nutshells, wood ash, which I've already said is grey, but feathers are very good. They're higher in, well, actually nitrogen, but they're here under brown matter. Vacuum cleaner dust, just to prove that just about anything will compost.
Hair. Well, I emptied my vacuum cleaner into the compost, and I was showing someone they needed to borrow my vacuum cleaner, and I said, oh, hang on, I'll just vacuum it. They were so impressed. They said, I never thought you. And I said, well, what do you think it all is? I mean, being a little bit mindful, if there's bits of plastic, take that out. But, yeah, add that to the compost.
Yeah, well, we do say be careful. But, in fact, it is pretty general that just about everything composts. Coffee grounds, which are actually terrific. You can grow mushrooms in coffee grounds. Crushed eggshells, that's for calcium. Old potting mix, so if you've been throwing it away, just throw it in the compost instead. Worm farm soil, the same sort of thing, and your own compost. Your own compost and some of those other things are not really there for carbon. They're there because of microorganisms that are already in there. And when you put soil in the compost, it's the same thing. You're not actually doing either carbon or nitrogen. You're weighing the compost down and you're introducing the million or so microorganisms that are in the soil. So it's not as simple as really green and brown, but... We thought we'd better catch up on what we had admitted last week.
Yeah, clarify. And then, like I've said, the magic when it becomes soil, it never ceases to freak me out that I've made soil. It's like, this was like amazing. But this month, interestingly enough, we're actually recording at my house, not at Trevor's house this month. So there are strange cat noises in the background from the neighbourhood cat.
But no traffic noises.
No traffic noises, but I'm sure the dog will bark occasionally. And interestingly enough, we're actually going to be talking about spring flowers and veggies while we are experiencing the most wild and woolly winter weather we've had. And it's, what, the 24th of September. So I love weather. I love the fact that it doesn't matter what we do, it never really lets us rest on our laurels. So
I think it's entitled to be a bit of winter and spring, but just last year was all summer. In fact,
yeah, that's true.
There was a winter last year.
That's true. I always know when it's going to rain, Trevor, because I put all my jumpers away and my blankets, and I store them away, and then 3 weeks later there's terrible weather and I have to haul them out again.
Well, you and everyone else, we all put our washing out in the hope it will rain, but it doesn't.
So tonight we're going to talk about basically spring being the major planting time of the year. No time to rest on your laurels, is it?
No, you'll be glad if you prepared your soil before spring, because now you know, when you ask someone like me, what can I plant, very innocently? I say,
and
well,
4 hours later, you regret the question.
That's right. This particular podcast might read like a list of plants, because that's our trouble. You can plant everything now.
You can, can't you? You move stuff? That's what I was going to ask you, actually, Trevor. I've got a couple of quite sad... They're not dying, but they're not doing fabulously well. Citruses, can you move things in spring, or is it best not to?
Well, I told you, I think the best time is winter because they're big trees. But when it's raining and cold like this is, anything is possible. Like, I was pruning the caperberry bush, and I was pruning it before it sprouted, and I put them all into soil. And then I told the woman who I was doing it for, I said, it's not working too well. And on YouTube, you've either got zero chance, according to Gardening Australia, or 85% chance, according to someone else. And we went away thinking we weren't going to get any caperberry cuttings out of this, because there's only one shooting out of about 10. But then I went back and looked at my caperberry, and it was sprouting.
Oh, fabulous.
So I said, I haven't pruned this enough. And I pruned it back heavily, and I put those sprouting ones into the ground, and they appeared to have taken. Now, that's no-no. You know, that's basically something you'd never suggest to anyone, that you take prunings whilst they're sprouting and put them in the soil. But it works, you know. So you can't tell what will happen when the rain is coming and the climate is cold, because all the usual rules don't apply, because you're not losing moisture. You are getting daily watering, probably 3 or 4 times a day, so it's always being moist. And your carrots will come up. And, you know, in summer, if you try and plant carrots, the soil's drying out. They're only 5 mil deep.
Yeah.
But now, if you really plant carrots, well, then its soil's always damp and it comes up very well. So plant your carrots.
And plant your carrots, because I actually planted carrots this year, and I've been harvesting carrots, really fabulous carrots for the first time.
Yes, I've seen those, yeah.
And I call them my COVID carrots, because due to working from home, I could keep the seeds damp. And that's your trick. Right. That's the trick. You've got to keep the seeds damp. But I'm definitely putting in another round of carrots, because nothing tastes like a homegrown carrot. They're so fantastic. My little granddaughter, she's just starting to eat solid food. So we pick the carrots and steam them, and it's lovely that she's enjoying that. So absolutely, I'm going to be putting in another round. Yeah. What else are we going to grow, though, Trevor? I'm looking at Trevor's list, and I'm feeling tired and excited all at the same time. Some things may already be in there, mightn't they, from the year before?
Well, we want to generate a bit of excitement, and this is certainly the month of excitement. You've got until November before spring finishes. But, yeah, everything can be planted. We naturally, you and I, we tend towards the edible.
We do, you know, we do. It's probably why we're so thin, Trevor.
But we probably should, in some ways, also think of landscaping. I mean, we talk about gardening as though it was edible, but there is landscaping, and there's a lot of reasons to landscape. You shouldn't have a bare spot, because landscaping means that your plants are absorbing carbon dioxide out of the air and putting it into the ground. They're giving you beauty, they're giving you smell, they're giving you health. So anything you plant and that grows is good for you. And I was thinking, when I came up with this topic, that we really should just slightly for a moment and talk about non-edible stuff, including, you know, the three big ones are trees, shrubs and ground covers. And so I have suggested my favourites. I mean, there are millions of things you can plant now. There are actually so many things you can plant now, you actually need a hand to restrict your planting list.
That's very true. Although I've become rather addicted to natives. I've got my native thyme in, which has flowered purple with the spring, which is very exciting. I didn't realise it did that. So, yes.
Do you want to get off the topic of edibles?
The topic of edibles. I could probably eat anything in the garden. Irises. Can you eat irises? No, you can't.
Well, no, we can go back on edibles. I mean, I was thinking when we're talking about carrots, that if you're talking about a list of edibles right here and now, well, radish and beetroot are in the ground the same. You put them in a seed and they're a goer. And in fact, on the subject of veggies, there are two main groups.
Yeah.
One is a tomato, and that's accompanied by capsicum, eggplant, cucumber, zucchini and basil. And the other is the Mesoamerican, the Middle American one, which is your three sisters of corn, beans and melons, you see. So they are just two main groups. But there are so many things you can plant right now. You should choose those two main groups, I think, because I think both those groups are absolutely fabulous. You know, the Mediterranean, the tomatoes and the eggplant, yeah, the capsicum, and that, they deliver you so many meals. And the Mesoamerican, the beans, the corn, the melon, they're very stable too. So you should get that into your head in order to clarify things, because what's coming next is complicated and confusing. You know? Because there is more than just those two main groups.
Can you believe that? Yeah. So I see you've got here lots of these beautiful flowering. And look, flowering is not just because it looks gorgeous and it does add to the landscaping, but it brings the bees. Yep. And if you've got the bees, your edibles, dare I say it, are better. But how beautiful to sit and just, it's so exciting when something flowers. I've planted hardenbergias. I see you've got that on the list there.
Yep, everything's on the list.
Everything's on the list, everybody. Everything is on the list. And my niece has made a gorgeous little meditation teepee in the back of my yard.
Very nice.
We're growing hardenbergia around it.
Not peas.
We made it just out of garden stakes. It's utterly gorgeous. And the hardenbergia, what a beautiful, hard-growing vine.
Yeah,
vine?
It is.
Climber, really, isn't it?
I suppose if we were to put order in these things, we probably should go tree, shrubs and then ground cover, but the reasons for planting things that are not edible are just as tangible as the edibles. There is smell, there is medicine, there is the beauty. I mean, I consider beauty to be an element of life, you know, and the fact that so many people now are looking out of windows into fences, it would be bloody nice if you could actually improve your view a bit.
Hang something. Actually, it's interesting because my son and daughter-in-law are looking at houses and they're like, we can't have any of those new estates. We can't stand looking at a fence.
So, yeah, I mean, you can't forget landscaping is really part of housing too, really. I think, you know, housing and landscaping go together. When we got our 2 acres, and admittedly that's a privileged position.
Trevor is practically the aristocracy. He'll kill me for saying that.
Yeah, but we planted our trees first. We did choose indigenous Australian plants. We did the peppermint, which is the odorata, the peppermint gum, the pink gum, which is the facciculosa.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful tree.
And the black mallybox, which is the porosa. We put 6 of them in each in, and they grow in beauty, and they are terrific for the native birds, you know. Yeah. Did I mention native birds?
Oh, you've mentioned native birds a few times now, but that's good. You're allowed to keep mentioning native birds. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, and then the Leucoxylon, which I didn't plant at first because it's actually native not only to here, but all the way up to Coffs Harbour.
Really?
So it's massive. It's called South Australian Blue Gum. It's Leucoxylon. But it's also called Mana Gum and God knows what else. You know, it's got 100 names. But it is a tree. It's flowering red and white now and all the birds are eating its nectar. So it's just a delight to have in your garden.
Gorgeous, yeah.
So, I mean, they are the three big indigenous natives and I do recommend them for windbreaks and I do recommend them for just ease of growing. You know, you put them in, you water them first year, and then you watch them grow. So they are terrific things to have in your garden. Now, I know you've got quite a few gums and big tall trees here in suburbia as well.
I know. And it's really quite delightful. When I first moved here, I must admit, we did have to thin out some of the plants. They were far too many too close. And while I was vacillating over whether I would cut them down, I happened to, in passing, mentioned to my brother that I thought they might need to be chopped down and came home from work and he had very kindly done it, because nothing is more exciting than chopping down a tree for some people, unlike for me. But I have got the most beautiful banksias. I've got a pepper tree which, look, it's huge and it throws a lot of shade on the garden. But then in summer it throws a lot of shade in the garden, you know, which is really lovely. I've got lots of beautiful natives. Apparently years ago the council gave free natives and that's when people were planting them. So yeah, I do have some lovely trees.
Grevillea robusta?
I do.
Beautiful tree, that one.
So yeah, trees are really lovely. And that's another reason why when my son was looking at building, they actually wanted to buy an established house because they would have established trees in the house. And I thought, well, that's a really interesting way of looking at it, really.
Yeah, it is. You have to take what you get, though. We planted carobs in our place, and They're not native, but they are terrific
trees. Oh, they're fabulous. That carob grove is absolutely gorgeous,
There is a writer called Trevor Nottle in South Australia who does write a very good book about the use of cool green shade. And if you think about it, it's better than a veranda because the tree itself is perspiring, it's whatever, transpiring and losing moisture. So it's cooling the space in more ways than one. And the native trees have got a problem in that they're only partial shade, whereas the unnated trees, like the carob and the desert ash, give you full shade. And the desert ash is a deciduous tree. They're very, very hardy. These guys come from places like Syria and so forth, where they know how to survive our hot summers. Yeah. I also think that olives are in that category of trees that give you full shade and grow very easily. The jacaranda is.
Oh, I love a jacaranda. Jacaranda's beautiful.
I know, beautiful purple flowers. And they're good street trees, some of these too. The bay laurel gives you bay leaves, and it's also very, very tough and easy to grow. We have local pines, you know, the Colitis pines. I remember them from the Little Desert, just east of the South Australian border, in the Little Desert in the area of Victoria there. And Colitis were growing everywhere, but it was, the rivers disappeared. It was so deserty, you know.
Really?
The rivers disappeared into the sand. But these Colitis would keep on growing. So there are good trees. Trees are a long-term investment. You put them in and they will grow above your head and then they'll get higher and higher and it will take some years. But they are a good investment. So from that point of view, they're first on our list of things that you can plant that are beautiful rather than productive, although they obviously have their uses. In the terms of shrubs, well, both of us have been to the Arid Land Gardens up at Port Augusta there, and they come up with a list of native shrubs.
That'd be great if you are looking for a visit. Make sure you go there because that is an amazing place to get some fabulous ideas as well. Yeah, so what shrubs? You've got the euphorbia. I love the euphorbia. I know. They're just, my gosh, what a tough, hardy kind of almost science fictiony looking plant, isn't it? Yeah. Do you reckon?
Well, yeah, there's so many of them that they vary like so many other things. But they're a native and they're a medium-sized native. The woolly bush, which I think is Calathamnus, I'm not sure about that, the Calathamnus of Boinicus. But it's woolly and it's got a red flower and they're still tough. That the Port Augusta Arid Land Garden is an excellent example of how to put drought-tolerant plants next to suburbia. It has several courtyards set up so that you can actually come in and you can get a theme and you can get things matched and they're natives. We all have to learn a lot more about it, but yeah, I certainly think that there is potential there, and it is just beauty we're talking about. There are other things too, like old man's beard. That's a sort of climbing plant that goes all over your fences without a problem. It's a white flowering thing. So we're not really good on this stuff, are we? We're better on edibles.
Well, I am finding that I am, particularly with my backyard, because it's quite shady, so you can't grow as many edibles. I've got a lot of fruit trees there, but I've been dispersing them with a lot of natives for the wildlife corridor and experimenting with that. It's actually been really interesting and really fun, and there's been a new resurgence in the understanding of how beautiful natives are and how they flower, but certainly that lovely ability to mix the indigenous plants and the non-indigenous plants. I'm getting better at that.
But I mean, is it you getting better, or is it the native birds getting better? Because one thing we notice is that a fig tree is very attracted to the summer crescent crocus.
Yes, that's very true. I've only got a fig stick at the moment, but it's getting there.
They don't know that it's not a native, and so the idea of mixing them is quite possible, you know.
But lots of the things like you've got here, like the salvias and the marigolds and the sunflowers. I mean, you can actually eat marigolds and sunflowers, and that lovely mixing of colour and shape, like the height, is one of the things as well, isn't it? Like that kind of mixing of the height.
Yeah, we're a bit amateurs. I mean, if you go to some of these gardening programs, they've got the hedges and the borders and the whole of the natural landscape all richly planted in varying height things like hollyhocks and purple bearded iris. And there's a million poppies. I mean, we've actually got a million poppies.
You do.
And they are all terrific. There's more than one. There's Flanders poppies and there's the Asiatic poppy and the Californian poppy. There's a heap of them and they just self-seed. So they just keep coming up. And with sunflowers, for instance, you may be thinking I'll buy a packet of sunflowers, but you can go to a fodder store and you can buy 200 grams of it and you get a million seeds so you can plant sunflowers all you want.
Sunflowers are so gorgeous. I love them.
They're good chook food.
They are good chook food, you know, and then you end up with sunflowers in your chook yard. I have a rogue sunflower growing in a hanging pot plant.
Yeah, how did I get that?
I have no idea. It's so amazing. I was thinking, it looks like a sunflower seed. They're pretty hardy, the good old sunflowers. I do love them.
We sort of said that there's more plants than we can actually talk about. And if we talk about them all, it'll look like a list.
It's a bit of a list. I mean, I think the thing we're trying to say to people is, experiment and have a bit of fun with it too. There were certain things that, well, like the tree dahlia.
Yeah,
you know,
we got yours, haven't we?
You got mine. So I had a tree dahlia and I'd planted it and it hadn't done well and then I moved it and it's done so spectacularly well. I was able to hack bits off and give it to Trevor and Nita and then they've planted it and it's doing really well. But it was such a lovely plant. I was happy to persevere with it and keep trying. And I think that's the thing with spring. If at any time you want to start experimenting, experiment in spring because spring's pretty forgiving.
I think you're exactly right. I think people listening are going to get confused by all the names and that,
yeah.
You know, the idea is for them to say, well, he told us a few things, but now we're going to go out and experiment for ourselves. You know?
I think so. And I mean, certain things are, you know, you've sort of got here for the health, the echinacea. I mean, oh my gosh, what a beautiful flower.
It's a beautiful daisy, isn't it?
So gorgeous. The morning glory. God, I hate that plant. I hate that plant.
I'm sorry about that.
I hate that. So I'm so sorry, Trevor. The valerian, gorgeous.
It's good for a nighttime tea. You get to sleep with that one. The echinacea is the root you use. The morning glory, perhaps not. It spreads. Is that why you hate it?
Yes, okay. I hate it. It spreads. Okay, it goes bananas. Put it in a pot plant. If you love it, actually put it in a pot. It's a bit like ivy.
Yeah,
bougainvillea. I saw the most exquisite bougainvillea all over a back veranda once. And I said to the owner, you know, I was walking past and they were out the front. And that's the beauty of gardeners. They're always happy for a chat about their garden. And I said, oh, my God. I said, your bougainvillea is gorgeous, but it must drive you crazy. And they pointed to this huge pot. And that's where the roots of it were. And they said, they had learnt their lesson from one they'd planted in the ground. Really clever way of doing it.
Yeah, well, do take notice of weed advice. I mean, certain things are weed. The morning glory is actually excellent for heart health and so forth.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's actually been put into a pill and doctors prescribe it. So
really?
Yeah, I know. Oh. You're right. It's more like a pest in the garden.
Put it in a pot. I think that's the reality of it. I've seen it work beautifully well in a pot. It's a bit like mint. If you don't want mint, which I don't mind mint all through my garden, but I know ivy is another one. You know, my poor neighbour spent days removing the ivy between our two houses, but in reality I think, if it was in a pot, we would have just hacked it off. And
yeah. I think you've got to be very careful. I've also got, not only for health, but for smell. I mean, currently our orange trees are flowering and that smell is very challenging to all the other smells.
Beautiful.
It is gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous.
We've both said lemon verbena is probably the Rolls Royce of smells.
It is, and I have your lemon verbena. So you made the most beautiful lemon verbena cordial tea, and I went out and bought a lemon verbena. Lemon verbena, just quietly, another very forgiving plant. I cut it right back because I had to move it.
I think
it's gone bananas. It looks really good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think your pruning's right. I'm going to chop mine off at the top.
It went berserk. And we've got the sweet pea and lavender. And my daughter-in-law actually said to me, oh, lavender, that's great for tea. And I said, oh, what are you talking about? And she said, Mum, make yourself rosemary, lavender and honey tea. I made rosemary, lavender and honey tea. Oh my gosh, best night's sleep I've ever had. And I didn't have any wine that night, so I couldn't even pretend that it was the wine that put me to sleep. So the lavender is not only it smells beautiful, But you can actually drink it in a tea, which is lovely.
I haven't heard of that one. Put honey in it and it'd probably drink anything.
That's actually true. We'll finish up with the edibles, Trevor, because we can't help ourselves.
No, well, currently it's like winter here and I've actually brought you around some peas. I could have brought you broad beans as well.
Yeah, I've got broad beans.
Okay, and they're everywhere. They are absolutely delicious. You have to stay cool and go with what's there.
Yeah.
Silver beet is there and that's terrific too. It's terrific with chooks and it's terrific with spinach.
Rocket. Now, can I tell you a rocket story? I've got my native rocket and I've got my other rocket and I've got my sorrel.
Sorrel. Okay.
My sorrel. And my rocket, my sorrel, were doing okay, but not great.
Mm.
Right? Mm. And I put a whole bunch of liquid manure on there and they kind of did mildly better.
Yeah.
3 days of sun last week. Remember that thing called sun that we experienced, right?
I enjoyed it.
And they have tripled in size. Unbelievable. So my favourite thing is I get my bike out to ride to work, I get my bowl ready for lunch at work, and then I go out to the garden and I get the bike out and I cut off all the rocket and the lettuce and I put it in the bowl, and then that's what I have for lunch.
Well, you're a good girl.
I know.
That's excellent for the old digestive tract.
And it's very exciting to pick your own rocket and veggies and
well, the smells come great, again. Aren't they? Yeah. That rocket smell, that's terrific.
Yeah, and I make a pesto, half basil, half rocket pesto, which is really nice. But you've got to like a little bit of zing.
Rocket's definitely got zing.
Yep, got a little bit of zing.
Yeah.
Chuck some nasturtiums in there.
I mean, I've been picking silver beet. Now, admittedly, I've got probably 100,000 earwigs in my garden, so a lot of it's hold. That's all right, because what you do is you pick it off the outside, because that's where it grows and that's how they eat it. And that leaves you fresh new stuff inside. And a lot of this stuff, peas, broad beans, the secret is picking them.
Yeah.
You've got to pick them every 2 days in order that more come.
Yep, absolutely.
Because if you leave them on there, those will get bigger and bigger and better and better, and you won't get any new ones.
I can't keep up with the parsley. Mm-hmm. I have that much parsley, you chop it, yeah, and it's going to seed at the moment.
Yeah.
And you chop it, and you have tabbouleh, and you chop it, then after a while you go, I don't care anymore, the chooks get it. But then I get the most gorgeous orange yolks in the eggs, so that's another thing.
No, it is great for the eggs. The situation is all those things are growing in our gardens, and I like them to be left there until they've finished.
Yeah, me too. How do we manage putting new ones in, Trevor? What do we do?
You just do it a bed at a time. There'll be a bed that has got the old, you know, you said yourself parsley's going to seed, so you rip that out and it gives you a spare spot. And in that spare spot, you know that summer's coming and therefore corn is a possibility. And with corn, of course, you think in your head, you're thinking pumpkin beans as well, because they're companions. And, well, you've got the famous tomatoes.
Oh.
It's a bit cold for tomatoes out on the outside, but you can pot them up and you can get everything ready for that famous combination. It must have 100,000 recipes of eggplant, capsicum, basil and tomatoes, plus kiwis and zucchinis.
Good old zucchini.
So you've got to put them all in, and beans, I'm holding off on beans because my peas are going so well because it's still winter.
Yeah.
But beans, once the weather changes, I mean, peas and beans, did I mention them before?
In case anyone's wondering, Trevor likes peas and beans as much as I like chooks. Actually, friends of Trevor and mine have gone to the Northern Territory and I've got a gorgeous picture from them of in the market someone had, obviously they've got their zucchini in a lot earlier than us, and they've cut it into slices and they've written on their salad cake. And I thought that was absolutely fabulous. We could probably do a whole podcast on what to do with tomatoes, capsicum and eggplant, which is amazing, delicious, fabulous.
Well, we could do the same thing on corn, beans
and that's pumpkin. True. I'm going to go out and do that now, but it's pouring with rain and there's a strange feral cat out in the yard.
Right. And we need the bloody weather to catch up with our ideas.
We do. You can tell spring's our favourite thing, even if it is pouring with rain and we're sitting here shivering in jumpers.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've done what we set out to do.
We've told
people that they now have to limit their choices because there's too much to plant.
Also, what we need to talk about is to suggest to people if they would like to buy some special tomatoes grown by Trevor, tomato plants grown by Trevor. If you hop over to the Facebook page, and we're doing a bit of a fundraiser.
That's the Gawler Broadcasting Association
Thank you. Sorry. Yep. Gawler Broadcasting Association. Pop over to that page and you're able to order some tomatoes. So if you would like to order those, that would be fabulous as a fundraiser. And next month, what are we going to talk about, Trevor?
I really don't know. I mean, there are a lot of different types of tomatoes. I guess even though I'm not really good at tomato growing, only because they're...
You're not meant to say that when we're trying to get them to...
My tomatoes are fine. And I've grown, you know, all winter's worth of tomatoes many a year in a row, but there are people who are very good at it.
Let's do a podcast on tomatoes. You say tomatoes, I say tomatoes. No, we don't. We both say tomatoes because we're normal. And that sounds like a great idea.
And it's a compliment. Well, the Mediterranean foods, perhaps.
Mediterranean foods, yes.
Yes.
Our Mediterranean friends out there. So that's October. So we will see you in October. So thank you.
And thank you from Trevor.